Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the School Sucks Show. Today is March 24th. My name is Brett Vanat. My guest today is Jonathan Milligan, a former high school teacher turned online entrepreneur. He is the creator of Blogging Your Passion University. Jonathan was originally suggested to me as a guest back in January to talk about productivity. But after going through a lot of his work, I realized he fits very nicely into this March theme as well. In fact, today's conversation is the first of two podcasts, the next two, that will focus on the relationship between productivity and creativity. Today, Jonathan and I will cover his advice for how to best direct creative energies from both a big picture, long-term purpose and vision type perspective, as well as some tips for maximizing creativity through daily routines. So that's it. Let's get to it. Don't forget to check the website, schoolsucksproject.com, for all the shows, including bonus shows, from the month of March. Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care. Jonathan Milligan, welcome to the School Sucks podcast.
Hey, thanks, Brett, for having me.
It's my pleasure. So you run the website Blogging Your Passion.
Yes, bloggingyourpassion.com and jonathanmilligan.com. I have two blogs.
So tell us a little bit about Blogging Your Passion and how you came to want to share this message.
Yeah, so it was kind of my own journey on the online, creating an online business. I started blogging and then I started making some AdSense income. It was one of my first income streams with a career coaching type blog. And then I thought, well, I wonder if there's other ways to make money with Google AdSense. And so I kind of fell into creating all these little niche blogs and all these weird topics. And I kind of got to this place where I was like really unhappy with what I was doing. And I said, I need to come back to what I'm passionate about. And so I came back to my main blog, started blogging my passion, the things that I was the most excited about, where I thought I could actually add value. And things began to build and take off. And so after a couple years going full time with my blog, I decided to start a second blog on helping others identify the things they're passionate about, where their gifts lie, and how they could truly add value to others and create an income online doing so. So that's where it came about.
Excellent. Now, I had originally had you booked for our January theme, which was productivity. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about during that month, we couldn't fit it in, but it's quite serendipitous that here we are on March 1st, and I found that your work fits perfectly into our theme for this month, which is creativity. One of the areas that we neglected in our productivity discussions prior to January was actually clarifying a purpose. I think you have some good resources on your site for helping people really get a compass for doing this. So that was one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today. Before that, a little bit more about your background. I just learned before we started recording that you came from the world of schooling as well, just like I did.
Yeah, I did. I taught for 3 years as a high school teacher right out of college. And that's kind of where I thought I was going to land. Both my parents were educators growing up. So I lived in a home of teachers. And so I did that for a few years. But then I just had an entrepreneurial itch and something that I wanted to explore. And I wanted to try to get in a position where I could help even more people beyond the classroom.
Indeed. What did you teach, by the way?
I taught Jewish history. And it's kind of an interesting story, but it was kind of what was available at the time for the school that I was at. And I had, man, 160 students, and it was my one thing that I taught.
Interesting. So about 3 years, you realized that it wasn't going to meet the larger needs that you had for your life.
Yeah, and that's a little bit what we're going to be talking about here in a little bit, is understanding what are those values? What are those things that you ultimately want to accomplish with your work? It's something that many of us never think about. We go into college a lot of times. People go to college and it's about what's going to give me a safe and secure job. You know, what's going to get me the gold watch after 50 years of service? Mm. But we don't take time to actually think about putting life at the center instead of work at the center. And putting life at the center of what is it that you ultimately want? You know, for me, money buys time. It buys time for me to spend with my wife, with my kids. It buys time for me to explore the things that God wants me to do with my life. It buys time. And so many people are in the reverse. They're in the time buys money. And they just fall into work and they do things that they're not necessarily excited about, but they just do it in order to work for the weekends or, you know, clock in, clock out, another day, another dollar. And I think there's just, there's this great opportunity right now for all of us to design work in a different way. And it can be different than the traditional route.
So for the younger people in my audience who certainly, you know, maybe they're 16 to 21 years old and they understand the setup where they go to a video store, they go to a convenience store or the ice cream stand and somebody pays them $7.25 per hour, that time money relationship makes sense to them. But can I just have a concrete example for the sake of people like that of how money buys time that you found in your life?
Yeah. So when you begin to build an audience around something you're passionate about, you have the opportunity to create products that go out of the one-to-one relationship. So when I create a course, a book, a membership site, when I create some kind of revenue model online that doesn't require my time, it's something Dan Miller calls Swiss dollars. And it's an acronym that stands for sales while I sleep soundly. Mm. And so there's an opportunity for many of us, and we're seeing this, especially with young people. I have a daughter that's 13, a son that's 11, and I'm seeing the people they're following on YouTube and Instagram and Snapchat and, you know, all these different things. These people are creating, these young people are creating these amazing businesses because there's tremendous opportunity online to do so. Another quick example is I have a girl that is going through my university. I have a university called Blogging Your Passion University. She is 16. She wants to get into the University of Georgia for sports journalism, but she also doesn't want to wait. She wants to start now. And so she is like learning how to create a website, a blog. She's starting an interview show where she can begin interviewing athletes and different people. And she's building right now as a 16-year-old, she's beginning to build a brand because we have all this access to us online to do so.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this is something that I've talked about pretty regularly on the show in the past. This idea, I mean, I'm 38. You're probably in that ballpark as well.
Yeah.
And we, you know, grew up in a time where we might have had, you know, ideas or things to say, but they just had really no place to go. Not certainly not compared to what's available today. And then it's amazing to think about as a student and a former teacher of history like yourself, you wind that back you know, a century earlier, two centuries earlier, when you start looking at maybe some of the stricter societies that existed the further you go back into time. Mm. So many creative ideas were probably, you know, lost forever simply because there were no channels to express them, or even expressing them wasn't considered for whatever reason to even be culturally appropriate. So this is really a golden age, a very exciting time for young people having access. I mean, you look at some of these YouTube channels of people who are less than 21 years old, and they are getting more views every week than like MSNBC, which as far as I'm concerned is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And even right now, my daughter is watching The Amazing Race. And it is full of people, young people, who have built something online. There are a lot of YouTubers. There's a lot of famous people that she follows online that are, I would say the majority of all of them are under 25. Mm. And they've got, you know, they're building amazing brands. So they can do a lot of things. But, you know, I tell people all the time, You know, the old school direct mail is now today the email, the ability to email people. The back in the day, the importance of networking, you've got Facebook and social media. TV, that was very expensive for, you know, get commercials or get airtime, and still is to this day. But you've got YouTube. Radio is, you know, buying airtime. Today you've got podcasts. And then the, you know, kind of the newspaper, the magazines, you've got blogs today. And so when you think about email, social media, YouTube, podcast, and a blog, those are all free and available to us to use as young people who are building businesses, as us building businesses that, you know, would be incredibly expensive to use to get our message out, even 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's, I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes of, well, these are shoes that I've worn in the past too, but I think a lot of people, especially a lot of young people who would listen to this conversation and they say, okay, here's me. And then off just slightly into the distance is all of these great vehicles for expression and communication. But in between the two is this huge ravine with no bridge across it called, how do I harness, you know, my creative potential? I don't know. And I think that there's a lot of adults who maybe did, as we talked about earlier, get drawn into the 9-to-5 type of existence. And, you know, I'm not knocking that, but there probably is in a lot of those people, I know I've talked to people about this, a creative appetite, you know, that just isn't being fed. And I think there's this really important unanswered question of what to do. You wrote and discussed on your site this kind of compass, this acronym that you used for developing a clarity about how to, we could apply it to creative work, but it was really about, you know, discovering what your passion is and establishing a vision and then working towards it, correct?
Yes, exactly. And I think this is an important piece. And it was something that I forgot that I kind of finally had to like, whoa, wait a minute. I took a step back in my business and what I was doing to figure out this compass. And I call it the Y acronym. It's not the letter, but it's the word Y, W-H-Y. And this is the question that I asked. And as your business begins to grow, or as you start pursuing your creativity, opportunities are going to start coming. And if you don't have an opportunity filter, you may ultimately be pulled in the wrong direction. I've seen it happen so many times.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you have to be ready before opportunity shows up. Like if you're not prepared before opportunity shows up, you'll get pulled in the direction you don't want to go. And then what you've done is you've created something you ultimately did not want. You know, I had a discussion a while ago, it's probably a year or two ago, with a friend who he's like, Jonathan, I have this amazing business idea. Let me share this with you. And so he started sharing it with me, and I won't share all the details of it. But my question was, okay, let me ask you a question. Let's go out 10 years from now. If you were super successful with that idea, what would it look like? He said, well, I'd have to have a couple warehouses. I'd probably have around 100 employees. I said, okay, this is the question I have for you. Is that what you want? And he stopped and he said, no, that's not what I want. I don't want to manage 100 employees. I don't want that. I want a more simple lifestyle business. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, make sure you're not building something that you ultimately don't want. And there's nothing wrong with having a 100 person business if that's what you want to build, but figure it out first by actually going through this Y acronym process. And I can share some of my own. I've had people adopt the one that I created, but I've had a lot of people adopt and create their own too.
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to hear the one that you created. That was the one that I saw and I found it very useful.
Yeah. So I started by just kind of answering the question, this specific question: what are you ultimately trying to accomplish with all the hard work you're doing? Mm-hmm. Because I found myself, you know, I love productivity and it's important, but I found myself working so hard on the runway that I really didn't know where I was going. And so I stopped and I just wrote it on a whiteboard in my office. You know, I think I ended up with four things that I wrote down answering that question. This is what I ultimately want to accomplish with all the hard work. Because I kind of got in this trap for a little while. I work from home, but I got in this trap that I had to work till 5 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
And I would like figure out, and I'm like, one day I was like, wait a minute, who made this rule up? And why, I'm the boss of my own work. why do I feel this responsibility to sit here till 5 o'clock? Like, if my kids come home from school, I should take off and go spend some time with them. I'm allowed to choose that. That's why I got in this in the first place. And so here are my four things, and I made it as an acronym so it'd be easy for me to remember. And it's the word life. So the letter L stands for lifestyle. And the statement I wrote is, I want to control the when, where, and what of my work. So that, and we talked about this being an opportunity filter. That means if somebody came to me, if a company came to me and said, John, you can work from home, but we want you to be our social media guy, and you've got to work from this hour to this hour, you've got to do this, this, and that, and you got to work on these specific objectives, you've got to, we'll pay you a six-figure salary, but this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Now, for somebody who's in that, that's, you know, making $20,000 a year, and they all of a sudden they get this amazing opportunity, it's like, all they see is the dollar signs. But what they often don't see is it violates one of their core whys. And it would violate mine, because I can't control when I work. I can't, maybe I can control where I work in that scenario, but I can't control what I work on and who I work with.
Yeah, it really, I can really, really relate to that, because I didn't have that clarity when I left teaching and set out in a new direction. A lot of it was really financially driven, for sure. I mean, I quit a job. I was teaching history at a private school in Vermont in 2006. I moved to the greater Boston area and started just interviewing for tutoring positions. And they're like, we'll pay you, you know, X dollars per hour. And I said, wow, that's unheard of. You know, mm-hmm. I will certainly take that job. But it was, you know, very demanding as far as a travel schedule was concerned, as far as a, you know, time commitment was concerned. It was very repetitive. It was a lot of the exact same work, SAT prep, a lot of the exact same work over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, I found myself in a position where I was dependent on doing that work. And I think it was even the same when I completely left, you know, the world of working for somebody else, and I started my own tutoring business, and I started this show originally just as a hobby. But even like not having a plan at the beginning, when I first started to put this message out, it attracted a different group of people than the group that I was trying to attract. And I had to shift and start, you know, trying to have dialogue with those people. So if you don't have that, this is how I want my life to look and feel clarified up front, you're right. You could get pulled in a lot of different directions for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that creating that opportunity filter will really help you. It'll make you disciplined and help you to ultimately get where you want to go, because it's easy for us to jump ship when a certain opportunity comes, even if it's not the right fit. And, you know, this happens to us in our financial life too. You know, if we're not disciplined and patient, we can have a tendency to jump and spend too much on a credit card, and then we get ourselves into debt. It's the same kind of discipline, but most people don't think about that kind of discipline when it comes to the work or the business that they want to create.
Absolutely. So if we're not careful about this L in the life acronym, mm-hmm. it seems like it could sabotage the I in certain ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an important point, because for me, I've had to say no to some pretty cool opportunities, but it didn't fit the when, where, and what of my work, which leads to letter I, which stands for impact. I want to impact millions in areas that matter. So what I work on has to make a difference. It has to make an impact. And you say, well, isn't every work making an impact? Well, in my scenario that I was talking about earlier, I was creating these little niche sites about, I mean, I'm embarrassed to talk about it. honestly, I was making niche sites about ladybug birthday supplies, because the keyword research and the income potential seemed good. I was making websites on solar pool covers, on indoor fireplaces, on garden lighting, on black mold removal. And here I am, I'm like, if I have to write one more article on black mold removal, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go insane. And I wasn't passionate about it. And I felt like I wasn't an expert in that. That wasn't something I was passionate about. And it came across in my writing. And so I don't want to do stuff just to make the dollar. I want to do stuff that makes a difference. And I want my message, or I want this stuff that I'm working on, to impact millions. And here's why. It's because oftentimes, especially when we're starting on the online business space, the money doesn't show up until the impact begins to happen.
Right.
And we have to a certain degree, we've got to have a deep well to draw from, which is passion and impact. And then the income begins to show up. But there is a period of time where we're still working towards the income matching the level that we really want. And so impact is key and super important for me.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your F.
Yeah. So the letter F is financial freedom. And the easiest way I wrote this, and this will make sense for the U.S. listeners, not so much for people international, but I want to write my own W-2.
Mm-hmm.
W-2 is a tax, you know, kind of a way that you, at the end of the year, if you're working a traditional job, you get a W-2 and it shows you what you earned for the year. I want to be able to write in that space. That means I don't want to be locked into a certain imposed salary. You know, this year is a leap year, and I had a chuckle when someone wrote on Facebook that says, if you're on a salary, today really should be a holiday because you're not getting paid for today.
Mm.
But you know, I want to be able to write my own W-2. You know, a very important example of this is a couple years ago, my son had a surgery. He was only 9 years old. He had surgery to remove a swollen lymph node in his neck that they couldn't figure out what was going on with it. And, you know, the insurance that I had at the time, I had to be able to produce $1,000 or $1,200 to make the surgery happen. And so what I did is I looked at the courses I created and said, what course could I bring to light and do a 48-hour sale with my audience? And so I did that. I put it out there to my audience. And within 48 hours, we made about $3,000 and took that money and immediately paid for my son's surgery. You know, people who are in different situations may not be able to do that unless they were disciplined enough to set money aside or they've got something going, but most of us don't. And so for me, again, that financial freedom to be able to create my own W-2 is extremely important. And again, I violate that if I get into a salary situation. Again, maybe not be right for everybody, but this is what is at my heart and what motivates and drives me.
Indeed. And there's probably, you know, when you talk about maybe not everybody can deal with the uncertainty, there might actually be a combination of doing your own kind of creative work that produces income, but also having a bit of, a safety net that has more predictable delivery. I mean, that's how things have worked for me for quite some time.
Yeah. And there was even a period of time in my journey where I had a job. It was only 10 or 15 hours a week, but that was kind of predictable income. And I saw it as a bridge job to help me during that time to have more time to work on my creative work while still having some certain income that was coming in while I was still building the business. So there's certainly value in creating or having the bridge job or an amount of certainty to help you when you're building a creative business like we're talking about.
Indeed. So, and finally, we have E for effort.
Yeah. So this is important for me personally. I want to grow to my full potential. I don't want to, and this is true whether you run a business or whether you're in a traditional career, you don't want to get in a place where you stop learning.
Mm.
Like if you stop learning from high school, or if you went to college and you stopped the learning process, you're in trouble, because I believe that we have to always be preparing. I was talking about this earlier, and it's like when opportunity arrives for you, it's too late to prepare. And so in my life, I'm preparing to stretch myself, to grow myself. I pick two big initiatives every single year that stretch me in ways of doing something I've never done before.
Yeah.
That helps to push me. And I think that is extremely important, that we not just get locked into what worked yesterday and we keep repeating the same things or we keep doing the same things and we're not actively growing. We need to actively grow and learn.
Indeed. Now, I looked at this when I first read it, and I related it to my experience, this kind of clarity that can come from answering these questions that we've just answered. And my experience has been, and I think this is true for a lot of people who do creative work, whether it's writing or some kind of art or audio or video, our attention can very quickly be pulled in lots of different directions. And I've started a lot of projects and not followed through with them, because initially there's this excitement like, yes, that's a great idea. I should really, really do this. But the more time goes by, the more I think about it, I say, oh, that doesn't really fit, or that would be fun. Or if I had, you know, more people helping out, that would be worth doing. But, you know, given the reality of the situation, it's probably something that should it be, you know, put in a someday maybe category or abandoned completely. And that's unfortunate. So, you know, I think that so many of us have this creative potential that isn't being realized. But when we do start to realize it, at least in my experience, it's not really very focused. So I think that, you know, over the course of this month, we're going to be talking a lot about how to foster creativity, both in young people and in adults. But there's also this very, very important question of how to direct it for maximum impact. So I thought that this was a really helpful tool for trying to do that, which is why I wanted to discuss it a little bit. And I wanted to go from this, which is, I think, really big picture, and focus down on something that's more procedural, which is how we actually organize our day. You talked about a book you read, The One Thing by Gary Keller, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you talk about maybe what the most important takeaway of this was for you?
So there's so many takeaways from that book. It's a must-read book for people, especially if you work in creative work, mm-hmm. or you want to build a a creativity-type business online. But what it helped me to do was to realize that there's a lot of good things I could spend my time on, but what's the great thing?
Yeah.
What's the great thing that I need to really dive into? And also, he talks about kind of the myth of work-life balance, and it's more about counterbalancing, which was a real kind of a paradigm shift for me, which has been super helpful. In other words, if we're going to do anything great, you've got to spend significant time, resources, and maybe even income on the thing to make anything move forward. You can't simply divide up all your time into little pockets and expect to make any significant progress on all of it. And so for me, what it helped me to identify was to protect, oftentimes what I like to do is protect my mornings. And my mornings are protected by doing creative work first. And specifically, that's anything that's related to creating text, audio, or video. Mm-hmm. Whether it's for my own audience or if it's for other people's audience, like I'm here doing today, it's important that for me, that I do my creative work first, because otherwise I get pulled into so many different things that ultimately don't matter.
Yeah, and you contrast this with what you call reactive work, which there is certainly plenty of. And, you know, when you're not, I talked to Kevin Cruz, who's an author and entrepreneur, in January. You know, he talked about this, your most important task, most valuable task of the day, and really focusing on that when the day starts. So if I'm not being mindful about my morning, certainly this has been true plenty of times in the past, I'll get up and for some reason, gosh, I don't know why, I'll just open my email. Mm. And like 15 minutes before this, I was saying, this is going to be a terrific day and it's going to be so productive and I can't wait to, you know, bring this idea to fruition and turn it into a podcast or turn it into a video and get it up there on the website. But then there I am staring at my email and saying, this will be an okay day, I guess. I'll settle for an okay day. Suddenly my priorities have shifted. And you say, if you're not really mindful of this, you're setting yourself up for a pattern of being reactive all day, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, just for those that are already maybe working a regular, you know, full-time day job, for me, what helped me with this was I said, okay, when do I have some time, uninterrupted time to work? And for me, it was between the hours of 5 to 7 a.m. Well, I wasn't really a morning person per se, but I said, this is important to me. And so I wrote down the words, work for yourself first. And here's the thing. When I woke up at 5 a.m. to work from 5 to 7 and gave me 10 hours a week to kind of work on my side passion, mm-hmm. here's the thing. If I woke up at 5 a.m., I was not going to get sucked into email. I was not going to be working on Facebook. Or if I did that after a day or two, I feel terrible about myself and about the time. You know, why am I waking up at 5 a.m. to check email and Facebook? I would rather spend that working on my creative work. And so that helped me also by disciplining my early morning hours when I still had a day job to work for myself first. And that way you don't get pulled into that reactive work. Because you're right. If I start in my email and social media, I'm going to get pulled into a lot of other people's agendas, crises. And so for me, if I can accomplish my most important task, which for me is creative work, because that's what my business is around, and specifically that's creating text, audio, or video that I can deliver value to people. Some of it's free, some of it's paid content. But for me, that's the engine driver for me. It's letting more people learn about me and then get on my email list. And then on the back end, I offer products and services to help them and make an impact in the world. And if I don't carve out time to do that in the morning, then I've missed my most important task. I've missed my most important thing.
Indeed. And I'd maybe like you to speak to this as well, because a lot of creative work is collaborative work, right? And
yeah.
The unfortunate aspect of that is it does require me anyway to open my email or to open the Facebook chat. And I think there's a kind of planning and a kind of discipline involved in not getting sucked in a different direction. So have you struggled with that at all? Or are you really more of a, I mean, most of the stuff I do involves guests or, you know, mm-hmm. coordinating with other people, or if it's like a larger website project, I have people that I need to communicate with about that. Are you more of a one-man show, or do you have strategies for not getting sucked into reactive work that way, because there is collaboration that is necessary in the creative process, and that involves turning the focus or turning attention to these more reactive type tasks?
Yes. And I think it's being mindful. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've done and I'm trying to get better at. But it's like, if I'm going I use Gmail. So if I'm going to Gmail because I'm about to jump on a podcast interview, or it's some, you know, specific reason to see if I've got a new email, I've got to tell myself, I'm just going to look at that email, because if not, I'm going to get sucked in and I'm going to start doing a bunch of stuff. I've even gone as far as not going directly to Facebook, but going directly to my private Facebook group that I have. For example, I have a private Facebook group for those that are in my university. And if I want to post something, I have a link that I click on that just takes me directly to that group. Because here's what I found. If I go straight to Facebook, I get sucked in. I see something that, you know, my friend's birthday, or, you know, I see, and then before you know it, it's 10 minutes later, I'm still scrolling through it. And I'm like, I came here to post something for work, and now I'm doing personal stuff. And so it's extremely important that you be mindful, and it's not something I've perfected, but it has helped me to say, take a deep breath and say, I'm going in, but this is my specific reason. I'll come back later. And I think that's the other key, especially for email, is I have, you know, two designated times during the day when I'm going to process email. Don't check email, process email. It's a big difference. When you check email, you just open stuff up and then you leave it sitting there, and then it just gets a mess. But I have two specific times during the day when I go and I process email. And so I tell myself to just leave it until then.
Yeah, this was advice that we covered in January as well. You know, setting a time that is, because email is so easy, you could just like maybe run out of momentum temporarily with like an audio or video project. And I just go over to my email Thunderbird and open it and see, well, let's see what's new, or let's check Facebook notifications, and closing those things and staying away from them and actually setting a time. If it's a half an hour, if it's 45 minutes to chip away at what's in there has been really, really helpful for me. There's one more little hack that I've been developing recently, and it's a nice segue to the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about today. So we're big promoters on the show of the program Evernote, and I know you use it as well. And one way to be able to communicate with people on creative matters, I don't know if you've checked this out or not, is a feature in Evernote called Work Chat.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can actually, you know, just invite people to look at notes and notebooks with you, and you can do that. You can do that with your web browser closed. You can do that with whatever your email client is closed. You can do it with Skype closed, and that's a beautiful thing for me, because I have those conversations existing in folders related to projects, so it allows me to be immersed in the task at hand. But aside from that, because we're talking about productivity and creativity in this conversation, I did want to just share with my audience a little bit about how you use the program Evernote and what the benefits have been for you.
Yeah, so it's I've used Evernote for a long time. In fact, it wasn't, was it a year or two ago? They were celebrating some anniversary and they sent you like the number user that you were. And I was under 100,000, which I was surprised that I was in the first 100,000 that signed up for Evernote. So I've been a part of it for a long time. And primarily, I like to use it as a place for a reference. So a lot of reference material goes in there. I have a notebook that I call the library, cabinet library. I've heard different people use different things like that. I also use it, I have it connected to my Kindle, and my Kindle highlights go directly into Evernote.
Wow.
Yeah, there's this. Yeah, there's this program. It's cost $1.99, but a month. But I think it's called Clippings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of it. Clippings.io, and they have it set up to where when you're reading books, like on your Kindle, that as you highlight things, you can have it synced up so that it can go into Evernote for you. So Evernote's a big place for me. What I do is, especially in reading, I'm a big reader. I read a couple books a week. I know it's insane, but it's important for me and my work.
Sure.
And so even if I've got a physical book, I will snap a picture of my notes. I'll keep one-page notes, like the top 15 highlights from the book, and I will capture that picture and I'll throw it into Evernote. So I have a file or a folder that's all for my to review my book notes. And one of the things I like to do is I spend my lunch hour reviewing book notes. It's more of a psychology term, but it's the idea of the spacing effect, if you ever heard of it in learning. It's the idea that, you know, if you repeat something and you view it over a certain number of times, it becomes easily recallable memory for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can come out at any time. And it's extremely useful for people who are on the creative, you know, advice type online business. And so that is extremely important for me to have notebooks like that. I also, one other thing is I capture my blog post ideas. So you can do this for podcasts, blog posts, videos. And for me, I have it synced to a program I use called CoSchedule. And so it immediately creates a draft WordPress draft for me. And then I can drag and drop that idea onto a calendar so that I can capture. So, because Evernote is with me wherever I go.
Right.
And if I get an idea for a piece of content, I can quickly capture it and it becomes something that can get onto my editorial calendar. So those are just a few examples, but I use Evernote every day.
Yeah, I'm always just interested in that input from guests who use it because at the very least, in the beginning, it is a ubiquitous capture tool. And mm-hmm. that's a great place to start. And my suggestions for the people who are new to the program, you know, start using it to capture the things that are important. Try to capture as much as you can. And from there, I think a process, a personal process, will unfold for how to use it best. So I just like to hear what other people are doing with it. Yeah, you've been at it for a long time. Like, if your user number under 100,000, can you put a date to that? Do you remember, like, when you found this program and started using it?
You know, I don't. If I looked at the email, I think they told you the date you signed up or something like that. But
years.
Yeah, it's been years. I've used this tool. You know, there's times where I kind of stopped using it and I went back to it. And then now it's just become so vital because it's easily searchable. It's easy to use. It's like what a lot of people say, it's your external brain. And if I have something that I don't need now, but I want to remember it later, it's an automatic to go in Evernote.
Yeah, and it is really a wonderful enhancement for people who are doing creative work because you never have to lose an idea again if you don't want to, if you're, you know, disciplined about using it. So I really, really appreciate the conversation, Jonathan, and I was hoping you could just tell my audience a little bit about your university and give us your websites and your Twitter before I let you go.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the time, Brett. This has been a fun discussion. I just want to help more people kind of pursue this path because there's, like we talked about earlier, there's an amazing opportunity for all of us here. And you can truly take your skills, your gifts that you've been given, and make them useful to the world and receive income and impact from that. And so it's one of the things I'm passionate about. So one of the things that I love to teach and help people with. I have a book that gives you kind of the basic foundations. It's called The 15 Success Traits of Pro Bloggers. You can find it on Amazon. It's in Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. But then a deeper dive is the university. It's called Blogging Your Passion University. And we help people walk through identifying what's the thing that they're passionate about, that they have the opportunity to earn income with. So, you know, those passion, skills, and income need to all work together. But once you identify that, then the university walks you through how to get traffic from that, how to create products for people. And it really just goes from passion idea to profitable online business and kind of walks people through step by step. And we've had the university since 2011. We've seen a lot of people go through it and find usefulness from the program. So that is can be found over either at bloggingyourpassion.com or specifically at BYPU. It's just the first letter of each word of Blogging Your Passion University. So BYPU.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much again for sharing all of that with my audience. And I'm sure there's plenty more we could discuss in the future. It seems like our missions line up quite nicely. So I would look forward to another opportunity to do that sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to.
All right.